Well, I call your attention tonight to the book of Job. The book of Job. I want you to go to chapter 42. People that love their Bible know that sometimes there are little small words or little small 1, 2, 3 word phrases, and they just pack a powerful punch. One of the passages that I just love to read through is what I call a quick hitter passage. It's found over in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. It says things like this: rejoice evermore, pray without ceasing. Just little quick hitter things like that. And whenever you read those things, there's just power there. And I want to take a portion of a verse in Job 42, verse number 5. And I want to just think about two words and how that it relates to this man that we know so much about because of the fact that we've heard his story. Now, you know that the book of Job is the first of the poetic books in the Hebrew Bible. You have the book of Job, you've got Psalms, you've got Proverbs, you've got Ecclesiastes and the Song of Solomon. You've got all five of those books that are considered to be part of the poetry of the Old Testament. And so you've got this story that's a Hebrew story, but it could be an American story. I mean, we've probably known of people that were extremely successful, and then all of a sudden they lost everything, and then God brought them back again. And that's the story of Job. And so we know about this, and the fact that old Job lived probably during the time of Abraham. That story's been around for probably close to 4,000 years. And so as he closes his book, he makes a statement in chapter 42 and verse number 5, and he says this: I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear. In other words, when he was early on in his life, maybe when he was a little boy, he had known about God. When he became a young man, he had heard things about God. Maybe even when he got to be a middle-aged man, he knew things about God that he had heard. Maybe that was part of a conversation that he would have on a regular basis, where that maybe he would get with some other Old Testament saints and maybe they would just talk things out. Perhaps even his friends, and he had three of them, that would say things like this: why don't you just go ahead and admit you've sinned, and that's why God's punishing you? And he would say, I've not sinned. And so they would berate him, and they would say, yes, you have. And he would say, no, I haven't. And so perhaps they were having discussions when they were young. And he said, I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear. In other words, I've heard the stories. But now, those are the two words that I want you to at least underline mentally, if not in your Bible. But now, mine eye seeth thee. And so, when you look at that, there is a transition that takes place. He goes from hearing to seeing. Can I tell you that one of the best cures to have a life change is the desire for that change? If there is something inside and you go, I need to be different. That desire is something that God can take and do something great with. But it starts with that desire. And God brought circumstances into Job's life, And when those circumstances came into his life, he saw what he used to only hear about. And so I want us to think about Job tonight and how that he heard, but now he sees, and how that transition began so that he went from being someone that just had a little knowledge of God to somebody that saw God in his life. And so there are a few things that I want you to just kind of think with me tonight on, and kind of take Job out of the equation and put yourself there. The first thing that I want you to see is that there is a transition from one degree of knowledge to another. He says, "But now mine eyes seeth thee." In other words, there is a point, there is a landmark that he can look on and say, that was the transition from when I only heard to seeing God in my life. And so he goes from a secondhand knowledge to a firsthand knowledge. One of the things that I tried to impart to my kids when they were growing up, when they were little children, every night I would pray with them. We would share a verse, and I would pray with them before they went to sleep. We started when they basically were infants, before they could even talk. But as they grew over the years, I would begin to tell each one of them, whether it was Sarah, who was the oldest, or Allison, which was the youngest, there is coming a time in your life when you can't ride Dad and Mom's coattails spiritually. You've got to do this on your own. You've got to be able to walk with God yourself. And that was a transition period. When they're 8 years old, they can't really do that. When they're 12 years old, they can do it a little bit more. When they're 16 years old, they're pretty much on their own when it comes to their relationship with God. And by the time they get to be 18, 20, they ought to be knowing what it means to have a personal walk with God. But it's a transition period. And it goes from a secondhand knowledge to a firsthand knowledge. And most of Job's life, according to his testimony in verse 5, I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear. In other words, I've known about you, I've heard the stories about you, but now, because of the experience that I have had, I see you. And God brings experiences into our life, circumstances into our life, people into our life, and those people are divine appointments that God brings our way so that we can have a firsthand knowledge of the presence of God, the guidance of God in us. When I think about Job, I think about how that he had to love the Lord on a certain level. But at the end, there was something deeper. You can't help but thank God when God has been so good to you. But then when things begin to go south, so to speak, and all of a sudden the winds of turmoil come your way. And then you begin to come back and you see what God's done. That deepens it. And one of the things that I really want our people and our church family to experience, and I think to a great degree, the people that sit here tonight probably are on this plane that most Sunday morning crowds are not. I would guess that the majority of you sitting here, just a handful of people that we've got here tonight, you think every day about your relationship with the Lord. You think about what it means to have a walk with God. You recognize the goodness of God in your life. You can point to certain landmarks and how that you remember that's what God has done for you. We've got a gentleman sitting here tonight, Brother Bill. He I don't know if he remembers telling me this story, but he was telling me about the impact that Randy Hardiman had on him when he was going through a tough time in his life. And Brother Hardiman looked at him and he said, God wants you to be happy. That was a landmark in his life. And when that happened, all of a sudden, everything changed. There are landmarks that you have that happen in your life. I can think of things that happened in my life. On Monday, Deb and I left Brunswick. And we were going the back way. We got on the interstate for about 15 minutes, and then we took a road, and we went through a little town called Ludowice. Some of you know where Ludowice's at. Some of you that are older remember Lester Maddox. Lester Maddox was the governor here in our state many moons ago, and there was a speed trap in Ludowice. And what they would do is they would catch Northerners as they came through town on their way to Florida. And they were making all kind of money and taking money from the folks from up north. And old Lester sent the state patrol down and shut the whole police department down. Well, we went through Ludowice. And then from Ludowice to Glenville, about halfway, there is a road. And the road is called Beard's Bluff. Down that road, about 2-3 miles, you run into a fishing camp. I think it's called Adams Fishing Camp. It was established in 1941. Can I just tell you that my wife would not stay there? Not that we wanted to stay there. She said, do they have bathrooms in those shacks? I said, no. She said, where do they go? I said, outhouse. She goes, I wouldn't want to stay here. And I said, we're not. And I said, but I want to show you this place because it's been 48 years since I've been down this road. And I took a picture of the Ottumwaha River, that direction, and then she said, well, take a picture of us with the river in the background. So I got my arm out there as far as I could. And I took a selfie of me and her on the Ottumwaha River. You say, well, what's the big deal about that river? It's one of my landmarks as a boy growing up. My oldest uncle on my mama's side, he would take me and my cousin and we would go fishing at the Ottumwaha River. I'd work in the fields about 2 days a week with my youngest uncle, and I'd fish with my oldest uncle the rest of the week. And we would go to the Ottumwaha. And I can't tell you the number of times, and it's a wide river. I guarantee you that river is wider from here to Langley. I mean, not Langley, but 78. I mean, it's a wide river. And we'd be out there, and it'd be hot, and he'd say, my uncle would say, jump in and swim a little bit. And me and my cousin, we'd just hop out of the boat, and we'd swim for a while, and, you know, and then we'd climb back in the boat. We didn't think about snakes. We didn't think about gators. We didn't think about nothing except, hey, we just having fun. We just going to cool down. And I remember those things as though they happened a week ago. Those were landmarks. Well, just as I have that landmark, I have a lot of spiritual landmarks where God has done specific things. And he has transitioned us from one degree of spirituality to another. And I can look at those things. I can remember certain messages that have happened in my life when the preacher preached, and it's as though God drove that deep into my soul. I remember my junior year of high school, there was an evangelist, a youth evangelist named Wayne Swearingen. And Wayne Swearingen preached the message out of John 21, "Lovest thou me more than these?" And I still remember that. I remember in college when I would listen to a tape over and over and over again by a black preacher named S.M. Lockridge. It's called The Lordship of Christ. I remember at the old location when Brother Mays Jackson came and he preached the message, "When God Sets Your Barley Field on Fire." I remember when I was given a tape by the late, great John Phillips, and I have all of his commentaries now because of this message. He preached on David before Bathsheba and after Bathsheba. And I mean, those are landmarks where God solidified certain things, where it went from a secondhand knowledge to a firsthand knowledge. And so we look and we see, "But now mine eye seeth." And so we go from one degree of knowledge to another. But there's a second thing that I want you to see. We go in transition to a greater confidence. Now you think about that for a moment. A greater confidence. When your children were small, if you have kids, or remember when you were a child, and it's summertime, and so, you know, we have a lot of people swimming nowadays. And Isabella is 3. And when she began to learn to swim, she got pretty good at 2. But now that she's 3, she's really beginning to grasp it. And last year, I would put my hands up and I would say, "Jump." And she'd go. And all of a sudden, it's like, "Nah, that's not happening." And she'd turn and she'd go and walk down the steps. But now, jump right off the side, right off the diving board, and she'll jump. I mean, she just has great confidence in somebody going to catch her. We have that same thing when God has come through for us over and over again. You develop that confidence when you've seen God do it time and time and time again. And so, there's that transition to a greater confidence. I want you to turn back to the book of Job, chapter 29. And I want to share a verse out of chapter 29. This is something that Job says. In verse number 18, he said, "Then I said, I shall die in my nest." In other words, I've got a nest that's been built, and I'm happy in my nest. I mean, I've got it feathered. It's comfortable. I mean, I can sleep well in it. The analogy for us today and the application for us today would be, well, I've got a nice little house. I mean, it's comfortable. It's cool in the winter. I mean, it's cool in the summer. It's warm in the winter. My bed's nice. Everything's good. And he even goes to say, he says, "I shall multiply my days as the sand." In other words, I've just got it so easy, I think my life's going to be even longer. In other words, I'm comfortable. I don't have stress. I got money in the bank. I've got sheep in the fold. I've got cows in the herd. I've got this. I've got that. Just as happy as he could be. But then, God comes calling. And we don't always understand the ways of God. We don't understand why God does certain things when he does it. And we think, "Lord, what are you doing to me?" Do you not think that Job would have had to have those thoughts? I mean, he's one of the wealthiest middle-aged men in the East. He has been blessed, oh my soul. He has had just all kind of blessing with his livestock. I mean, his barns are full. God has given him 10 children that love each other, love their father. I mean, he's got a nice nest. He is thinking, man, I'm just going to live for a while, and when I die, it'll be just nice and comfortable, probably going to sleep. Everything will be wonderful. But then, one by one, those possessions begin to go by the wayside. I mean, you've got these whirlwinds and these little tornadoes that come by, and they break down his buildings, and you've got the robbers that come by and they take his livestock, and then all his kids are together and they're at a party, and the building that they're in collapses and kills all of his kids at one time. And then on top of that, he begins to lose his health. I mean, here this man is, he's been a middle-aged guy, probably nice and robust. I mean, when the men of the East looked at him, they thought, well, that's a specimen of masculinity. And then all of a sudden, they look at him and they go, I don't want to look at that. I mean, he has got a sickness that comes over him. He, according to the scriptures, he has these boils that are putrefying, and he'll literally sit in an ash heap and take a broken piece of pottery and just scrape his arms and his legs and his stomach and his rib cage. Why? For relief. Because of the pain that he's in. His wife even looks at him and says, why don't you just curse God and die? Such an encouraging woman. I mean, just curse God and die. And he said, you speak as a foolish woman. In other words, he had heard the stories of God, but now, even as he's sitting in an ash heap, now he sees God. But now. And so there is a transition from losing everything to seeing what matters, God. When God steps in, everything's good. We sing a song sometime around here, and we have people that sing it as specials. No one cares for me like Jesus. And if I'm remembering the song right, and Daryl Macon, correct me on this, but there was a man that had lost his wife and his children on an ocean liner, and he was going to take another one later, and they sank and drowned in the ocean. And he's by himself, and he pens this song, no one ever cares for me like Jesus. And Job found that out. Job realized that everything that he needed was in his God and not in his flocks. Everything he needed was in his Lord and not in his grain. And everything that he needed was in his Lord and not even his health. And so, he had a transition to a greater confidence. And so he says, but now, mine eyes see thee. There's a third thing that happens in the life of Job. And we can see this in this verse. We see that there is a transition from a faulty attachment, in other words, things that are temporal, to a faithful loyalty. In other words, God took everything that he had only to give it back to him in spades. But he did not know that. But when he saw God work over and over and over again, he became loyal in a greater way during that transition time. And you and I need to realize that the Lord allows us to go through trials because it draws us closer to Him. David said in Psalm 119, verse 67, he said, "Before I was afflicted, I went astray, but now I have kept thy word." Now, I want you to be honest with yourself. Do you pay a little more attention to your relationship with the Lord when you're struggling or when it's good times? From my perspective, I have to really be careful. Because, you know, when the successes are coming, I get to thinking, yeah, you know, that's great. That's wonderful. I'm doing good. And maybe the prayer times don't last quite as long. Maybe the Bible study, you know, gets cut short for 15 or 20 extra minutes instead of spending the normal time. Well, you know, I probably know that material okay. When things are going good. But I'm going to tell you something. The Lord allows the affliction to come. Because that is when we get closer to the Lord. And I want us to make it a point that when God has been so good to us, that we don't take that for granted. Can I tell you that I love loyalty? I do. I love loyalty. I want to be loyal to Christ. I want to be loyal to this church. When I was 22, Brother Don hired me. And I made up my mind that even though I was not the smartest, I was not the most talented, I was not the most gifted, I made up my mind that as long as I was at this church, I would be loyal. There were going to be a lot of people that are going to be a lot more brilliant that may come through. But there weren't any of them that could be more loyal. And I'd have people come to me and they would say, "Can I talk to you about something?" "Yep." "Now you can't tell anybody." I said, "Well, let me stop you right here. There's a caveat to this before you tell me anything. There's two of them. If you tell me you kill somebody, I'm telling the police. And second of all, if it's something that I deem necessary that Brother Don know, he's going to know it because he's the pastor and I work for him. Now, if it's something that he doesn't need to know, all right, that'd be between me and you. My wife won't even know it. But if it's something that affects this ministry, he's going to know it. Because he's the one that's responsible for this place. He's the pastor. And loyalty has always been a big deal for me. You may not be the smartest. You may not be the most gifted. But you can be loyal. And so he had a loyalty to his God. When everybody around him is faltering, when his wife is faltering, you speak as a foolish woman. And so that transition was one of great loyalty. There was a lady named Agnes Jones. You don't know Agnes. I don't know Agnes. She lived probably 150 years ago. And she wanted to work with Florence Nightingale. That is a name that you do know from history. She was a nurse, Florence was. And this little young lady, Agnes, when she came to work for Florence Nightingale and her ministry that she had, Florence noted that she was not extremely gifted. But she made this statement about her. He said that she was a girl that made her way to the top in her organization because of her fidelity and because of her commitment to her duty. In other words, she wasn't the brightest. She wasn't the most talented. But she was loyal and she worked harder than anybody else. And she got to the top right under Florence Nightingale and their ministry. And so you and I ought to make it in our mind, make this point. I will be loyal to the cause of Christ. Let me give you another one. Give you one more, and then I'm going to ask you to help me with something. But now is a transition from one experience to another. I want you to go with me to Colossians 3, verse 8. And I want you to notice the language of the Apostle Paul. In verse 8 of chapter 3, he says, "But now ye also put off all these." In other words, church at Colossae, here's a transition for you. But now, just like there was 4,000 years from our time, 2,000 years from Paul's time, but now that you put off all of these. So what does that mean for us? That means that we take this little letter that he wrote to the Colossians and we apply this to our own walk. You, right now, you begin to make the decision. You have the desire to put these off. You put off anger and wrath and malice and blasphemy and filthy communication out of your mouth. In other words, the way that you talk, put that bad stuff out of your mouth. Don't talk like a heathen. Lie not one to another, seeing that ye have put off the old man with his deeds. And so, the Old Testament in Job tells us, but now. But the New Testament tells us this as well. Now, I want you to help me with something. Travis, you got your Bible? I want you to look up Romans 6, 22. Brother Bill Childers, look up Romans 7, 6. Brother Bill Wynn, would you look up Hebrews 11, 16? Hebrews 11, 16. And Brother James, let me get you to look up Ephesians 5, 8. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Why don't you give us all the verses in the Bible that have the but nows there? I'm not doing it. I want you to come across those on your own. But I am going to give you four. And so what I want to do is I want to have each one of these verses that I've just assigned, I want to have those read so that you can see the but nows and what is supposed to follow, how that we go from one experience to another experience. Travis, stand up and read 6:22. All right, but now, Brother Bill, let me get you to read Romans 7:6. All right, there's another but now. Brother Bill, let me get you to read Hebrews 11:16. All right? And there's another, but now. And Brother James, read Ephesians 5:8. But now, walk as children of light. All of those verses point to another experience, another time of transition, another time of transition. Throughout the Bible, you're going to come across that little phrase, but now. It goes all the way back for millennia. But it's just as true for us today as it was for Job when he made that transition from just hearing the stories and hearing people talk about it to firsthand knowledge of becoming an eyewitness to what God can do in a person's life. Let's stand together.